Thank you so much. I want to comment a little bit last night when we went over to Sydney First Church up the road here about 25 miles to Chris Heckman's church. Chris was one of our Beeson pastors about 5 years ago. And Amy Jennings, that's just leaving. Amy, hold your hand up back here. That's her brother. And Amy runs our Beeson Institute out of the office at Asbury. Does a great job. Would you give Amy a big hand, dear? Great job. So that was quite a family. And one of the things I want to comment on is that when Chris was a student, we talked a lot about lay ministry together. And it's been so much fun to watch him go up there and discover all these people that were just hidden in the background, that were literally not involved in any way. Very talented, gifted people. Some of the most gifted people you could ever have in ministry. And watch those people come forward. And every one of those persons who talked last night were very passionate about what they were doing for Christ. I mean, they were so passionate. I know that you felt that and experienced that. And go and do likewise. There's rich treasures awaiting your discovery and development in your church. And he really reversed the curse of a church that had been declined for 25 years. You could just feel the life there last night. And it wasn't fun how they took that old building and brought it up to date and made it so attractive. And just shows you can do it. And praise God for that. Okay, today I want to talk briefly somewhat, because I want to give a chance for a question and answer time on small group ministry. You might say when I talk about small groups, I'm full of it. I could just talk all day, but I want to get where you are. And yes, we talked about why small groups. Today I want to talk more about the system of small groups. What I think happens is that few pastors understand that small groups is more than just having a group or two groups or three groups, but you need to think bigger than that. The only limitation you have to groups is leaders. And so you have to think leadership and how you develop that. But you also need to be thinking, what do you put in place to get a system that keeps reproducing the result that you're after? The result that I would be after is the multiplication of more healthy groups. And how do you do that? How do you get in place what you need to make sure that this keeps happening, that your small groups are healthy groups, that they're multiplying groups, they're reaching people for Christ, they're discipling people for Christ, they're caring for the people, they're developing leaders, and all this wonderful community of loving one another, caring for one another, praying for one another, sharing with one another, is taking place in your small group ministry. How do you get this multiplying small group ministry on an exponential curve? Is that a good question? Now, what I'm going to share with you is one I observed from my 23 years of building the first group to over 500 groups in New Hope Community Church, and then to what I've experienced different places across the world, North America. I did seminars for Fuller for about 10 years. We had small group seminars, I don't know, 15 or 20 years at New Hope anyway. And so what I've kind of learned from everyone. Now, no small group system is exactly like the other one. Your own uniqueness is that you have to carve out your own small group system and ministry. And they'll look different from the church down the road or over the next state or another country or something. But there are principles that are important for you to catch and understand. And I want to share with you the 7 key principles that I think unlock the door to building a successful, multiplying, effective small group ministry that just keeps building and going on and multiplying in your life, your church. All right? The first key that unlocks the door, you might guess this one, is leadership development. Leadership development. I cannot tell you how many times I've heard this remark. The only limitation that we have is we don't get enough leaders. How many can identify with that? Getting enough leaders, all right? How do you get leaders? Well, the answer is you have to take baby steps and you have to grow them up one step at a time. And I'm going to come back to that in a moment and show you something I think will be helpful in seeing that. The mistake that we all make, and I've made it many times, is I look for the full-grown leader and I'll say, well, I don't have a leader. When the reality is that the only way you get leaders is you have to grow them up in your ministry. That's how you get leaders. And when you grow people up in your ministry, they are so much into the vision of your ministry. They have the core values of your ministry. Their heart's there. And it's just a wonderful thing to keep growing together as you grow this wonderful church for the Lord. When we look across the world, neighbors have said that 19 of the 20 largest churches in the whole world have very effective small group systems. Now, in North America, and I touched on this just a little bit yesterday, there are really three kinds of small group systems that we see. There is, number one, what I call the appendage. The appendage is where someone gets the idea they'll have a small group, dedicated lay person, they'll just create a group, maybe another lay person will, and it kind of takes place around the edges of the church. Not much is said about it, there's no training. There's no oversight. It's not really a part of the whole system of the church. The second kind of system that we see, and we see a lot of this in North America, is what I call the departmental system. I get calls all the time, Dale, where can I get a small group pastor? Now, that can be both good and bad. It's bad if you think that by getting a small group pastor, everybody else checks out of that. It's good if you're talking about a point person that just keeps everybody motivated and everybody else in the small group ministry. We have a youth department, music department, so it's very easy to think in terms, okay, I'll bring in a small group person, that'll be a small group department, and I'll kind of check out on it, the rest of the pastors check out of it. We made that mistake in prayer years ago at our church. I went over to Korea, and I got so turned on to prayer. I mean, when all the time I was there, I felt like I was in kindergarten in terms of prayer life. So we're going to come back and have a praying church. And I took a lot of staff with me. I remember the first staff meeting back, I turned to one lady and says, you're going to be our lady in charge of prayer, the pastor of prayer. And then about 6 months later, I realized that all of us had checked out of prayer. And every time we even had a meeting together as staff, we're asking this lady to pray. And we have a special prayer emphasis, and the rest of the pastors aren't even there. And I said, something's wrong with this picture. If this is really a core value, we really want this in our church, then all of us on staff have to own this. So the third kind of system, which I build at New Hope Community Church, and which you can tell I'm more passionate about, is what I call the total integrated system. And that simply means that as you build your church, that every area of your church and every person that you bring on that staff or grow up on your staff, that part of their job description is, it's your job to be in a small group, create leaders out of a small group, and create all these small groups in your particular area of responsibility. Now, you can immediately see that if you have 5 people on a staff, or you have 10 people on a staff, and they're all committed to that core value and living that out in their ministry and in their life, that you multiply the results many, many times compared to one person being over small groups. Can you see that? In fact, at New Hope, I created the system that really every pastor on staff would report every week on how many groups they had, how many groups they were supervising, how many groups they had they were planning to start. So that's why we would have 500 groups, because all of the multiplication, everybody's involved, totally integrated. And there's a difference between having small groups and being a church of small groups, where this is the very center one of your main focus points. Let's say you have three or four main points of alignment in your ministry, that becomes one of the very main points of alignment, focus points for you. That's when groups really will start to multiply in your church and ministry. Now, I know that many of you are from more traditional churches, and you can't change the direction of that big boat overnight. I remember one time when I was working with Larry DeWitt out in California, and he had gone to one of my seminars. He said, "Well, Dale, that's where I want to go, but right now I just have a few groups led by lay people. They've been doing that for years, kind of on the edges. And so what will we do?" And so we sat down, and what we did, we decided we would two-track this. We would say anybody that comes in from now on, they're going to have training, they're going to have supervision, they're going to have all these things that we think that should be the model for our small groups. We're going to go over here now to these people who have been faithful and say, "We appreciate what you've done. Now, we're going to have this new way of doing small groups. We're going to be more intentional about it than we've ever been before. We're going to be more focused than we've ever been before. We're going to provide things like training. We're going to multiply leaders. We'd love to have you come and join this. It's going to be so exciting." But we give them the choice. They said, "Well, no, you know, we've been doing this. We don't need that." Okay, well, Lord bless you, encourage them, pat them on the back. But run it on two tracks, the old track, the new track. It's a very effective way to bring change in a lot of areas. What happened in his case was, after about 3 or 4 years, there wasn't anybody left on the old track. Everybody's already on the new track. Just kind of gradually, the old just kind of faded out, and they're on the new track. So if you really want to get effective at small group ministry and you catch this new vision about being totally integrated, remember, you may have to run on two tracks for a while. You may have some people on staff, like one pastor said to me, "Well, I got 5 people on staff. 2 of them believe in small groups, 3 of them don't. What will I do?" I said, "Well, I'll tell you what you do. If this is a core value, if this is your main focus, then you've got to work on getting the whole staff into that, because if they are not on that page, they will undercut that core value. They may not mean to do it, but they will by their own testimony of not being involved." And so what you have to do is give them a book to read, you know, take them to a seminar, take them to church where there is small groups that are very alive and active and multiplying, and invite them to become a part of that. But if they don't, then invite them to go somewhere else and help them find the place. And love them in Jesus' name. Just don't have them on your staff anymore. If you really want to have total involvement in small group ministry, then it means total staff involvement in commitment to this core value. Okay. Now, point number one, leadership development. I think the most important task for a pastor and for people on staff, your pastoral team, is leadership development. I believe that you should require more of leaders than you do of anyone else. My concept has been that you want your leaders to model the Christian life, so that they lead by example in their life. I lead by example by being in a small group myself. I lead by example by the life I live. I lead by example by the leaders I produce out of that group. I lead by example by bringing neighbors, new friends into that relational group. I want my leaders to be more committed than anyone else. So we actually, in our training, had our own training manual, and I really recommend you create your own training manual. You can copy any of my stuff I've ever done. I've already sold enough of it. You know, my kids are through college. Just take it all. Use it. Don't even ask anymore. Anything of mine, just use it. Bless the Lord. And but, you know, we had spelled out what we required of people that are going to lead our groups. Now, I'm not suggesting you copy that, except where it's appropriate, but change it, alter it, but come up with your own requirements. We're going to require our leaders to go to training, to come to the initial training, continual training. We're going to require that they be on the same page with our vision, our core values, that they are men and women who model the Christian life. So we had all of these different things that we required of our leaders. Now, in leadership, we have to be more committed than anyone else, or it will not happen. And that begins with me. If small groups are really going to happen in our ministry, I've got to be more committed to that as a senior pastor than anybody else. And then my staff has to be really committed to that. And then the people that we bring into leadership of the small group, they have to have that same vision and heart and passion for the small group ministry. In fact, that's one of the main things you look for as you're selecting and choosing and cultivating, developing leaders. Now, I think people have a right to know what you're going to expect of them in their lives in being a small group leader. And so you need to be very clear about that up front in your initial training. In our small groups, we would have three different leadership positions. We would have the leader. We would call that person a lay pastor. You can find your own term. I like the lay pastor simply because they're going to be doing pastoral ministry. Lay simply means they probably work at a secular job and don't have the fortune to get paid for it like I do. That's about the only distinction, because they lead a small group just like I would. And so there's the leader, there is the assistant leader, the apprentice, we call that, becomes a very important person. I was doing a seminar one time, and I went home. I'd made the statement that it was essential that you have an apprentice in every group. And I'd been very emphatic about that. And I went home, and I suddenly discovered that only 80% of our groups had apprentices. So I said, okay, we got to refocus again, gang. Let's get back there and make sure that we have that apprentice in every group, because that's our key to the multiplication of that next leader and group that we're going to have out of that group. So you pay attention to that point. And if you don't use your apprentices along the way, then they won't keep involved and keep being developed. So it's important they be developed and be a part of what's going on in that group. Third was the host or the hostess. There are a lot of people make really good hosts or hostesses, make people feel welcome, have the gift of hospitality, who will never probably be the leader of a group. But that's an important role. Now, watch this. If you have three leadership positions, what comes out of that? First of all, you don't burn out one person. You know, you always get the person's really eager. They'll come in and say, oh, just let me do it all. I don't need an assistant. You know, I don't need a host or hostess. And they come back in about 6 weeks and they want to quit, because they work with their job and they find out where they got to get the cookies, you know, and they got to make the phone calls and they got to get the lesson together. They find out, well, that gets to be a lot. But when you divide up the ministry with other people, it doesn't become too much for anyone. And here's a really good thing. If you've got three people, if they're married, you got three couples, you're going to have six people there. So you know you're off to a good start. Works good. Now, the best place to get leaders is the people that come up out of the groups. That's a whole part of the system. You bring new people into the group, you win them to Christ, you disciple them, and right out of that comes your next leaders. Now, I want to go to a place on the screen we're going to put up here, what I call the one-step principle, the one-step principle. I learned this from one of our small group leaders. Can we put that up? There we go. Our small group leaders. To me, I'm going to illustrate to you what I call incarnational leadership, which I believe is the leadership of Jesus Christ. Word made flesh, dwell among us. See, Jesus came to where we were. He gave up everything to come to where we were. He didn't stand up here and say, you know, come, because we couldn't get up there. No way we could get up there. The only way we were ever going to meet God was by Jesus coming to where we are. I have a strong feeling that There's something unchristian about top-down leadership. It doesn't trust people. It doesn't elevate people. It doesn't bring the best out of people. But incarnational leadership goes to where the people are and raises them up, believes in them, trusts them, empowers them. Now, you've got a person on step one, and you're up here, you're a clergy person, maybe you're on step 9 or 10. One of the things that embarrasses seminaries today, and since I am connected with Asbury Seminary, I just go ahead and say it. But the largest churches in the world, for the most part, are being pastored by people who never went to seminary. It drives seminaries crazy, if they ever think about it. Now, I think that may be because some of these people who've done really well in business, been called into ministry, they may not answer all these Greek questions way up there, or these theological questions, but they live closer to the people. It's easier for the people to touch them. Just a thought, something to think about. But it illustrates all the more why we've got to go to where the people are, and we have to take them from step one to step two. How do you do that? You take the person along and you show them how to do this. You talk about it, you pray about it, and then you have them do it, and you talk about it. How do you get then to step two? You see, you bring people right along. Now, I started to say, I learned this lesson from one of my lay persons, Bob Sabal, who happens to be the brother of our Brookville Tabernacle pastor. He was a wonderful lay pastor in my church. And he said to me one day, he said, "Pastor, I've got two people in my church that are going to make great small group leaders, but they don't know it." Don't you love it? And then he went on. I said, "Flush that out for me a little bit, Bob." He said, "Well, you know, they're pretty new Christians. If I asked them to be my apprentice, that'd be too much. Scare them off. But I'm working on them." I said, "Well, what are you doing?" He said, "Well, you know, last week," and he named the man. He said, I said to him, "Would you call on this prospect?" And he said, "Well, I don't know how to do that." So I sat down, and we practiced a little bit. And then he did that, and I affirmed him. Now, what's he doing? He's bringing the guy along one step at a time. He doesn't even know it yet. And he said, a lady in our group, he said, "I'm bringing her along. I had her do the prayer time last week. She didn't know how to do that, but I sat down and kind of shared it with her, and then she did that. I affirmed her in that." See, one step at a time. Now, even before you get an apprentice, you have to bring people along one step at a time. Some of the greatest preachers I had on my staff were people I started with on step one, step two, step three, step four, step five, step six. I had one who could preach better than me that I taught. And I'm sitting there thinking, I don't know if I like this or not. Then I said, "Oh boy, praise the Lord. Oh, he's one of the boys I trained." Now, when you have a good small group system in place and you're working it, you should have people on all these steps coming along. Think about your own ministry. Who is it that you are intentionally bringing along one step at a time? And when you talk about leadership development, the very best system that I know of is a ministry system. It's not a program, and it's small group ministry, and it lends itself so well to bring people along one step at a time using their own spiritual gifts in that small group system and developing and growing in leadership in the ministry. Is this helpful to you? One day when I sketched this out for the first time, it was just so helpful to me. I've been doing it, but I didn't know what I was doing. My pastorate's been a lot like that. I just do things, and then later I'd figure out, hey, that was okay. Lord helped me in that. It gave me a little more sense than I thought I had or something, you know. But, okay, one step at a time. So how do you grow up leaders? Let's hear it. All right, keyword number two is the word advance. I believe that you need to give your lay person some way that they can advance and grow in ministry, that they can see, they can be challenged by. You know, we go to first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, so on. But how do people grow in your ministry? We had three levels of of ministry, we have what we call the training level. Now, that's a person that's been recruited out of a group 90% of the time or for some other place, and they're brought to our initial small group training weekend. They may already be the apprentice in the group, or they may be the one who's going to become the apprentice in the group. And at this training, we're going to take them through all of the training we have in our lay pastor training manual. And on a Saturday, we're going to have a commitment time where they commit themselves to be a lay pastor in training. And they promise to come to the regular training times. They promise that they will be the apprentice in this group. Now, about 5 or 6 months later, if they've been faithful in doing what they said they would do and committed to, then they get the opportunity at the next big training event to become a full-fledged, what we call, lay pastor. And we would, in a public service, have a concentration time in which they are recognized and dedicated into this ministry. At that time, they become the leader of their own group. So you can see they're moving up. The third level is what we call the lay pastor leader level. And you'll see in some of my materials pages of job description of this position, but basically is a person who leads their own group, but now supervises and encourages maybe 3, 4, 5 other small groups and leaders. And sometimes you'll break out of your training into what we call huddle groups, where they would actually work with this core of people that they would have. Now, this is where a spiritual model, I believe, is different than a business model. Carl George and I used to go round and round on this one, but I come down on the side of the ministry model. I think that you have to always model ministry to teach ministry. And also, these will be some of your best small group leaders, so why would you take them out of leading small group? So, as senior pastor, I would still lead a small group. First of all, I enjoyed it. But secondly, I'm modeling. But these persons would still lead their small group, but they would have this cluster of groups or people, many of which they produced out of their own group, which is kind of a natural link up. And here's another way they can grow in ministry. We would have a retreat once a year in which we bring all the people who are ready to become lay pastor leaders. And we have a very marvelous time of prayer and sharing and further training. And they would make a commitment for 1 year. Why 1 year? Because it may be too much for them. And because we're going to give them a lay pastor leader badge to wear, we don't want people wearing the badge that don't do the work. And so we want a natural way out of that a year later where we re-sign those people. Now, this became a very natural fishing pool for staff people. Watch this. Here's a person now who's been growing in ministry, who have grown, they may be ministering 30 or 40 people. If you start to add up the groups they're supervising. Many times, those people, we've brought them on maybe half-time on staff. They already got all this ministry going. And then as they grew more groups and more ministry, it was very natural to see for them to come on full-time in staff. I saw the day where more than half of my pastors were people that had been grown right up out of small group ministry just like that and grown large ministries. Some of them ministering to hundreds of people as God grew them up. And they grew with people in ministry. Now, don't do it just like I did it. Let God speak to your own unique ways, but provide some way for your people to advance and grow in ministry as you grow them up. You're welcome to copy mine if you want to, but if you can do it better, do it better. But take the principle. People need a way to grow and advance in ministry. It's biblical. You start them out in small things, and as they're faithful in that, you increase the responsibility and then grow in ministry together. All right. Number three, keyword train. Train. Train your leaders thoroughly. We would say, you supply the person the commitment, and we'll train you. Four ways that we trained our small group leaders. There is number one, the initial training. This is the big training weekend that we'd have, and I'll speak about that a little later. Secondly, there is the regular training. We had training every week. 80% of our groups met weekly, so we'd save them time by coming to train because we're going to go through a lesson that they can go out and facilitate without any more study. Plus, it was just really good motivation, sharing, modeling together what we're going to do in small groups. Now, some churches have training every other week. Some have it once a month. You got to find your own pattern for regular training. But training is essential. It's very, very important. Number three, on-the-job training. People do learn ministry by doing ministry. I was back in Columbus the other day. And I preached my first sermon there in Westerville, Ohio, the night after I graduated from high school. I was 17 years of age. I preached the whole Bible through in 12 minutes. Now, hopefully I can preach better today. Why? Because I've got all these years of doing ministry. People learn ministry by doing ministry. They do not learn just sitting there doing nothing. Will they make mistakes? Sure, they'll make mistakes. But you got to be there to encourage them, you know, and bring them along, keep teaching them. But they learn by their mistakes too. Fourth kind is continual training. Continual training. What kind of training do people need? They need spiritual development training. They need skill training. For example, little simple things like, what do you do with a person who talks too much in the group? You'd like to tell them to shut up, but you don't do that, right? Very interesting. People talk on eye contact. Did you realize that? Now, sometimes the person, can I walk down front and this thing and be all right? Sometimes the person who talks a lot, you can silence them if you don't sit across from them. If you just sit beside them, they can't see your eyes. It's hard for them to get to talk much. Now, if they keep on talking, you kind of put your hand on their shoulder. All nonverbal communication. If they still talk, you lean into them. That's all nonverbal. See, we teach something like that in our skill training. Or one of the things I like about having... Our lessons that I would write would have, you know, 14, 15 questions, and you could say, okay, now let's move on to the next question. Or, Lee, you know, you've had a lot of turns here. good job, but let's give the other people a chance. That'd be all right for let them talk first now and something like that. So that's the kind of thing we would teach in skill training and helping people to have a better small group ministry. By the way, we would work with things like EGRs. You know what EGR stands for? Extra grace required. All right? How many have been in a group with an EGR? Okay. Now, it's not so much a problem in a support or recovery group because all of those people probably are in such pain that they are EGRs. See, an EGR, somebody's got to have all the tension. And they suck all the energy out of a group. But you get a regular group and get an EGR in there where they're dumping their emotional load and they're monopolizing all the time, people won't come back. They drop out quick. So we would say to the leader, when that happens, say help. And maybe pastor, we'd go there and we would pray about it. But I remember Deborah was an EGR because her husband left her and she's scared to death. And she has four kids. She's in pain. She's dumping on the group every week. People are starting to get uninterested, starting to drop out. You know, they don't want to go there. They can't take any more emotional load from her. So we got her aside and said, Deborah, you know, we realize your pain, and the leader and his wife will meet with you afterwards and pray with you some more, but we really can't be sharing this for the whole group every time. We need to move on. But over at the church now, we have a wonderful group called Divorce Recovery. And I think you ought to go to that group. You get a lot of help out of it. Plus, we got some child care there to help you out. I see her 3 weeks later. She says, oh, Pastor, I've gone to that group, and I'm getting so much help. I said, Deborah, yeah, and as you move through this, and you can move back to your other group later on. Now the other group, see, they're doing fine. They're moving on because they don't have that problem there every week that's just drowning everybody in their group. So EGR is one of the things you do have to help in your oversight and help your leaders with, because so many small group leaders are so compassionate, you know, and they have trouble trying to confront someone, so you need to be there and assist and help. Okay, train. The fourth thing is supervision. What do you think that people need the most? What do they need the most? Encouragement. Do you ever get discouraged? How many ever get discouraged? I used to quit every Monday. Then I got more mature and I quit on Sunday afternoon. You know, just put your hand on your shoulder and say, hey, you know, I try to get those people to come to my group and they didn't show up. Just be faithful. Keep calling. People, they'll come. Just encourage. But that's where supervision becomes very, very important, to be there at those low times where you just encourage the person and then build them up and help them get over that little spot that they're in. Supervision becomes important of the leaders, the one-on-one relationships with the leaders. But we found that when we would go out and supervise our groups, I mean, a lay pastor leader or one of the staff people would go and supervise the group, and we try to be there about every 6 weeks, that the quality would come up in the group. Plus, if they knew I was coming, we'd have really good cookies that night. Yeah, your pastor, have another cookie, you know. But, you know, you just sit there and be a part of the group, not engage too much, but talk to leaders afterwards and find out, you know, do they need more prospects? How's the host home working out, you know? Any different kind of problems do you have you need help with? Just being there to encourage and help them. And see, the quality goes way up when you care enough to be there and encourage and assist your leaders and be on site once in a while and in that kind of a place. You remember I said something yesterday. I don't even know as I've ever even said this when I'm talking to small groups. I said small groups are hard work. Do you remember that? They're hard work. In fact, some people aren't willing to do what I call the nitty-gritty everyday work that it takes to make small groups work. But I want to tell you, when you invest that hard work, it pays such rich dividends. I mean, when your groups start to take hold and people are finding Christ through your groups and they're being discipled through your groups and they're growing together in groups and they're so excited about the Lord and they're multiplying leaders, I mean, it really takes hold and the fruit is marvelous. The fifth thing is called accountability. Accountability. In the church, we're not very good with accountability. But I think to have a successful small group ministry, you've got to have some accountability. By that I mean that you come to training, and we ask our leaders to give some kind of a report. And we had, you know, how many people are there? How many visitors are there? How much time did you spend in prayer? Did you apply the lesson, for example? You know, are there any problems in your group? Just a short report. Now, wonderful thing today, you know, you could let your people send the reports over the email, which is fast. And all the pastors would get their reports. They would take their reports and make their report to my office. And every staff meeting, I would pass out the collection of all the pastors' reports. So we would know every week how many people were in groups, how many groups met, how many new people were in groups, which we watched carefully. And so a part of the system was this accountability. Now, I'm not for, in my style, I'm not for the kind of heavy-handed accountability I've seen in some groups, ministries. I mean, you know, I don't want people calling me to see whether they can go to the bathroom or not. I'm joking a little bit, but I don't want to run the person's life. I want to grow up mature people in Christ who model the Christian life, okay? And I trust them in their leadership, because they're living under accountability, they're coming to training, they're living, you know, according to our high standards of a leader. Now, I run into pastors that are afraid to trust people in small groups. They say, aren't you afraid, you know, they'll start division and do all of this? Over the years, I had very little of that. When I look back, I suddenly realize why. Because we ask people to come to initial training. We spelled out exactly what commitment we wanted. If you're not committed to this church, we don't want you to be a small group leader. But I'd make a great leader. Well, are you a member of this church? Do you believe in the ministry of this church? You may lead a group somewhere else, but you're not one of our recognized groups unless you have this kind of commitment to this church. So someone come to our training and say, well, Pastor, you know, I'd like to lead a group, but I don't want to sign this commitment sheet. We put our arm around and say, you know, you're a great person. God loves you. He'll probably use you in a lot of ways. But I'm sorry, you can't be one of our leaders. See, you're better off to cut it up front, because the person who is rebellious against that, they're the person who will be like the Lone Ranger doing their own thing and will cause difficulty down the road. So if you do a good job up front, you don't have the problem down the road. Are you with me on this? This is a part of this accountability you build into your small group system. I hope this is helpful to you. Number six is the word recruit. I was sitting with David Youngie Cho, 25,000 small groups, largest church by far that's ever been built in this world. 750,000 members. We're sitting in Korea. We're at this breakfast. There are about five of us. And young kid asked him this question. Dr. Cho, where do you get all these small group leaders? And Cho said, I get them from new Christians. And I said, yay, because that's what I've been doing all these years. It's just a confirmation. Now, does that mean the minute someone receives Christ, they become a leader? No, it doesn't mean that. But it means you start right in, bring them along one step at a time. Picking up on all that new enthusiasm. All those people they now know outside the church where they have come from inside. Bring them right along. So here's what a cycle would look like. We bring a new person to the small group. We win them to Christ. We disciple them. We begin to bring them up one step at a time. Pretty soon they're an apprentice and they're a leader. And then maybe they come a lay pastor leader. And then maybe they come part-time on staff. Maybe they come a pastor on staff. See how that cycle works? We just keep starting going all over it again and again, again and again. Go out and get the new person. Bring them in. Disciple them in the group. And there goes the success cycle. Recruit, recruit, recruit. Who recruits? All the pastors recruit. Your small group leaders recruit. When we would have our initial training time, we would celebrate all the new people that have come that our small group leaders have brought. Now, you can make all the announcements in the world, and you'll not get the result you're after. Yes, you need those kind of announcements in the church, you know, in your bulletin and your newsletter and stories about small groups and testimonies about small groups. But the best recruiting is always done one-on-one. Because your best recruits are people who are the busiest people. And they will only give you that block of time commitment if you give them the vision one-on-one and you ask them. Someone asked Mrs. Marshall Fields, why did you give $1 million to Northwestern University and gave nothing to your denominational school? And she said, because the denominational school sent me all these letters, but they came and they asked me, one-on-one, will you give $1 million? And so I wrote the check. Wrote the check. I remember one of my pastors, he had this dream book. He called it his dream book. And in it was his vision for small group ministry. He'd make an appointment with someone, and he'd sit down and he'd get his book out, laying on the table, and he'd start going through it point by point, why they should become a small group leader. That's how he would recruit people, one-on-one. He got some wonderful, wonderful recruits into. And those people that you recruit, I know because the people I recruited one-on-one, they've been marvelous small group leaders over the years. They have a long service. Now, your people that just kind of come in from the announcements, they usually don't last very long. That's just the way it works. Just something for you to think about, okay? But you got to keep recruiting, 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 recruiting. The seventh thing is what I call events, events. We first started out, we call our event a Super Bowl. Bring back only the new recruits.
And then on Saturday, only the new recruits. And then we do a commitment time about 2 o'clock on Saturday. And that's kind of the pattern we would follow. Now, one of the things that we would do, and it sounds kind of corny, but I do a lot of corny things in ministry, so I'll just share this one with you. I don't even know where we came up with the idea. We got the idea one day, we would hang these clotheslines up, and we would put our groups online. So every pastor over their small groups would have their own clothesline hung up. And they'd have a little 8 by 11 sheet paper. Here would be the leader. Maybe they didn't have an apprentice yet. So they're working during this weekend to get a leader in there. Or they have a host. Or maybe sometimes they put up a blank sheet and we're going to start. We have this goal to start this new group. And then they fill that in during this weekend. And they're going to start 3 weeks from now, and it's going to be this kind of group. It's going to target a particular need, or it's going to be a regular kind of TLC group, or whatever kind of group it's going to be. So they get this all up online. So it's kind of a vision casting thing that goes on through the whole weekend. And some of my pastors got so smart, they started planning these groups before I even got to the weekend. Isn't that great? So we'd come out of one of these Super Bowl events with maybe 40 groups planned. Now, in the early days, I didn't know that, and I didn't hang the clotheslines, and we didn't come out of those Super Bowls with any groups planned. And what would normally happen is that over the next 6 or 8 weeks, all these groups would be starting. Well, if a couple of them didn't work out, that wasn't the biggest deal because you already got all these other new groups starting. And it seemed to me like about the time we would get down the road, 3 or 4 months, time for another Super Bowl, and we're starting to build up to that, we would have already started all the groups from this and back here. So it just kind of kept giving us that new boost, new boost, new boost. Okay? Now, someone said, should you have short-term groups or ongoing groups? The answer is both. You need some short-term groups that hook people in, get them into small groups, and you need long, ongoing groups, so you have these relational groups, and you never stop group ministry. It goes on and on and on in your church. Okay, at the Super Bowl, we're going to go through the training manual. We're going to cast vision. We're going to teach about the Holy Spirit, who's the great person that everyone needs in ministry desperately. We're going to teach people how to write out their testimony and give their testimony so they can share their faith with people that they come in contact with in their group. We're going to talk about what's expected of them. We're going to teach them how to make a phone call. Now that sounds kind of simple, doesn't it? We used to hand these cards down to our small group leaders and half of them would call on them and half of them wouldn't. What's going on? Well, some of them are afraid to call. So we have a printed sheet, we sit down, and we practice different kinds of phone calls. When we started doing that, then we started to get about a 90% return on people following up on the contacts that are pushed right down to where they are to follow up people in ministry. Big difference. Number six, we would teach the 21 principles of how to have a successful small group. These are kind of like the basic fundamental principles. And those are printed in your book there for you that you can look at and use. Okay, I think, Warren, where are you? Let's take questions with the 10 minutes we have, all right? Nice and loud so everybody can hear.
Switching mics, that one works. From a lay pastor to a lay pastor leader, you were talking about the lay pastor leader still being a lay pastor to a group.
Right.
Is there a number of groups that lay pastor leader should be limited to? because they're still working with.
Okay,
their
how
group.
Many groups or cluster? I call it a cluster. Some can take care of three, some four, some five, some six, because maybe they have more time and more gifts. So I'm not real rigid about that. In my writings, I may say four or five, but I'm a little loose at that point. Do you understand? Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, say the word flexibility.
Flexibility.
Now, some things I'm very firm about, and a lot of things I'm very flexible about.
Excuse me.
I think to have a good small group ministry in North America, you have to have flexibility. Example, we would write a lesson. We work with people on curriculum and support, recovery ministry, and so forth. But someone come and show me, here's a book by Swindoll. Can we study this? Sure, go ahead. Keep coming to train. When you finish, come back to the regular stuff. That's flexibility. Or you get someone that says, well, I can't come to your training times because I travel all over the country. So David Dury, one of the pastors, would meet with his small group leader on Sunday morning for maybe 15 minutes before church and go through things. So there's a contact there. There's flexibility. You understand? And the larger ministry gets, you can have more training times in a week that people can pick and choose from. You also can do things now like CDs, where you put a lot of your training on CDs and people take that with them. There's a lot of flexibility. Okay.
But I have about 26 Sunday school classes and about 37 small groups. I have a lot of people who are in Sunday school and loving it, but are not getting the real accountability of a small group and the real learning from the scriptures in such a short period of time. Any advice on?
Okay, I think your question is, do you have Sunday school or small groups? Is that
how do you, I don't think it's a or, but how do you
do both?
Begin to help people in Sunday school classes learn more about the accountability and the goodness of small groups.
One thing you can do in a Sunday school class where you've got a good teacher. You might work with that teacher. You do the same thing maybe in a large woman's Bible study or a large men's Bible study. Work with the leader, and maybe they could shorten down their teaching time and maybe spend 20 minutes around tables with facilitators where they pray for one another, encourage one another, and actually have a couple of questions that they talk it over, their application kinds. So that's how you can take a larger group, break it down into smaller caring segments of small groups, still using the strong teacher. But the point is, you got to get people connected. And if you have a good Sunday school structure, people are used to coming to that. For goodness sakes, don't do away with that, because there's an important hour taking place there.
Okay.
Our children's ministry, let me speak to that a little bit. Once we caught the concept, our children's ministry was grouping children anywhere, any day, any way we could, and Sunday school was just one of those ways. But we probably had 16, 17 other ways children were grouped. When you begin to think in those terms. Okay.
If we have a small group started, and it's been going for a while, and then you want to multiply or make another small group out of that, how do you encourage people when they've got this close connection? What's your way to get them to move?
Okay. Let me illustrate here a little bit. Here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people, 9, 10. We're having a wonderful time together. That's a nice number, isn't it? 8, 10 people. We can know each other, see each other, care for one another. Park our cars around the house. Then we have 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. So what are we going to do? We've got 19 people. What are we going to do? Okay, let's do it. You people go over there. You go over there. Who likes forced division? No one likes. You got 19 unhappy people. Why would you do that? Now, never think division, always think multiplication, and the way you multiply is by developing leaders. When do you start a new group? When you have a leader. So you bring that apprentice along in the group, and the apprentice is ready, and you begin to work with them now. They're becoming a leader to get an apprentice for them. You talk about place they're going to start and when, and so you announce the group. Okay, next Wednesday night, Linda's ready to lead the group. She's going to start the group over here, and it's going to be at a certain time. Let's all pray for that group. We pray for it. Now, any of you want to go over there, you just go over and help her. Be pioneers. Be great. Build a new group for Jesus. You know, always come back and visit us anytime you want. That's a key. Come back anytime you want. But go over there now and be a pioneer and start that group. Now, what happens is 6 people go over there, start the group. Now, we have empty seats here, so we go back to work bringing people in. And then over there, now they've got to get more people, or they're never going to be people of 10 or 12. So multiplication takes place through leadership development. Multiplication takes place through leadership development. Say that with me. Multiplication takes place through leadership development. When do you begin a lead? When do you begin a group? Leader. See, people get so hung up on how many in the group. What makes a good group? Well, I've been in a group of 4 people. It was wonderful. I've been in a group of 16 or 20. It was wonderful. So it takes more skill level when you get more people to get participation. Participation is the key to success in small group ministry. Say that with me. Participation is the key to success in small group ministry. The more they participate, the more successful it's going to be. It's hard to get more people to participate, but there are even ways you can do that. You can, you know, have a part of the lesson. You can break into prayer groups of 3 or 4, like we did the large number here this morning, small prayer groups. Some of you got 8 or 9 instead of 4, but that's okay. I didn't get bent out of shape. You were praying. That's good. Flexibility. Okay? Now, but you begin groups when you have leaders. Okay, next question.
All right, How do you connect new members to your small group without running them away? How do you connect?
A good question.
Members?
How do you get new people in your small group? You have to create an environment that is open, accepting, friendly. I remember one of my first groups. This new guy invited came in with a 6-pack. I mean, he wasn't housebroken. He didn't know he was doing anything wrong. And I saw this one older lady's eyes roll, you know. So, you know, I just went over and he said, you know, maybe we could just kind of put that in a closet and you and I could enjoy it after everybody leaves. I better straighten that. I didn't, you know. But What is so much fun, you know, when you start getting these new people and they aren't church broken, I mean, they'll say anything in a group. And that's why your group has to be accepting and, you know, have that kind of loving environment where people can do that. But if your language is all church language and people don't connect with that and they're left out, they're not going to come back. Okay? So it's hospitality. It's great to have a warm hospitality person who understands making people feel at home and warm. How many go in a house, just think with me a little bit, how many know some place you go where you always feel comfortable? Somebody's got the gift of hospitality there. How many have gone in a place and you felt like you shouldn't even sit down? Okay. You want your groups to be the kind of place people feel warm and comfortable. And that has a lot to do with the way you greet people. It has a way with the way you talk. It has to do with accepting them as a part of the group, you know. Good question, though. Very good question.
I think you wanted to show a video.
Oh, not yet. I'm on more questions.
One more then?
Warren's trying to get me on time. There you go.
Question I want to ask is, if you make a small group out of the choir, what are the things that they focus on? Do they sing in the rehearsal? What do they do? Can you give me some insight on?
I can tell you about our experience. People are, with their time limits, they're probably going to only come out one night a week, whatever that is. People have less time today than they did 10 years ago. So we need to think about that. So, you know, there are a lot of different times to group people, early in the morning, late at night. But with the people involved in our music, we had a huge choir and orchestra, 150 people involved on a Thursday night. And so we would have our practices And then they would have about a half hour, 45 minutes afterwards, in which they grouped in four or five people with a facilitator, lay pastor, leader in the choir, where they would pray for one another, share their concerns with one another, and have maybe a couple of application questions. Short lesson. Very short. Okay? Same thing with men's breakfasts. You know, we would gather early in the morning on the way to work, a different lesson, shorter lesson. After we get done talking about our favorite sports team, you know, laughing at each other a little bit, eat breakfast, we'd go right to the lesson, pray for one another, keep it all in 1 hour, and guys are out the door and headed for work. That's the best way I've ever known to work with men, particularly men that have heavy responsibilities. Okay. Let me take one. These are good questions.
Dale, could you speak to many of us who are in traditional churches, a long history of doing things departmentally in ministry? For instance, music, youth, children's ministry, those kinds of things. How do you move a church and your leadership from thinking of ministry departmentally to seeing it as a small group where it's truly integrated once you've been an established church?
You start to cast the vision, but you move slowly. When you get a chance for a staff change, get a person who's on that wavelength you're going to. You know, it may take you a few years to get that all in place. You may have to two-track. You run the old track while you're creating the new track. Okay? And in all transition, you've got to do the same thing anyway. You've got, whatever it is, you've got to run two tracks, old track, new track. And you do that over a period of years. That help? You know, if you don't have any groups, you can always, without changing anything, start some groups around the edges. That's where people are the most likely to respond anyway when you're starting out. People aren't even in anything yet. And you just got to, you get a group here, get a group here, get a group here, get a group here. Pretty soon you got all this new life around the outside of the church. That's the way to revive and renew an old church without changing any structure at all. You just start bringing all this new spiritual life in.
I would like to ask, in a larger church when there's so many demands on time, especially from the pulpit to cover so many different ministries that are a part of the church, how did you go about in keeping small groups in front of the people on a week-to-week basis or monthly basis? How was the best way that you found to keep that in front of the entire congregation?
Very good question. If I had two illustrations and one involved a small group, and one didn't, I'd use the small group illustration in the sermon or my experience in small group. That would come out various times in sermons. Nothing like a short, well-given lay testimony by someone who out of a group into a public service. We would, of course, have stories of group ministry in our New Hope publications. We would have that kind of thing in our bulletin. We would have out here in the foyers of the church very visible tables that people could go and find out about small group ministry and meet someone there or talk to and actually get involved in a small group. So there's that continual week after week. You know, in a large church, everybody's bidding for that minute or two of announcements, and so you got to decide what are the two or three things that are the most important and center on that and not just have... I had a policy, we would not give any announcement that didn't involve most of the people. We're not going to say, okay, this committee of five people will meet after church. We're not going to do that in public service. That's wasted time. Plus, it makes all those other people feel left out. So you do really have to work to keep that focus. And doing our Super Bowl three times a year forced us to go back and focus for a couple months during that time when we're building up to that as center of things in the church. Question?
I got one over here, and then I'll come
back
over
here, and then
mic.
We'll take one more here, and then I need to probably.
Warren, we have cell groups in our congregation, and this fall, about 2 weeks ago, we did a cell group kickoff entitled "A Place to Belong."
Good.
And had 40 people, new people, sign up to be in those. How would you suggest, we don't have at this point the trained leaders probably to grab a hold of those, how would you suggest that we would integrate those people in since they sign up, so we can do that
rather quickly. I admire your enthusiasm, but I think you made a mistake.
Okay.
I'll not use you as an illustration. I'll use another pastor. I had a young man call me. He said, I got 400 people signed up to be in small groups. I said, that's great. But he says, now I don't have any leaders. I said, well, I think you did it all wrong. And by that, see, I can understand getting that many people signed up because as a part of me, I just love to do that. Get a whole bunch of people signed up. Let's go. Let's get this thing going. But small groups are different. You do have to grow small groups up from the bottom up. By that, I mean you start with a model group or a larger church, 3 or 4 or 5 model groups. You run that for 3, 4, 5, 6 months. Grow some leaders about that. Get into the second generation of groups. Then you go more public and start signing up more people. Are you with me? Now, in your case, you already got a lot of interest, so maybe you can pull together some potential leaders out of those people that you could say, we've got these people, we really need leaders bad, and kind of crash course it real quick.
I heard you say that if a group came to you and said, we've got this great book by Chuck Swindoll that we want to study, and you would just say, great, go with that. But in general, did you not say that for your small group leaders, you had some kind of a curriculum or a discussion?
I wrote a lesson that went along with a sermon, separate from the sermon, but it was a lot of application of the area we're working with.
Okay, so that was your responsibility then as pastor? Who developed that?
I did.
Okay.
I never could quite get everything said when I was preaching anyway, so I just was kind of out of the overflow. But we with our leaders, they didn't have to do all of the lesson. They could skip, choose. The reason I did that was a couple of reasons. People have good intentions but never get around to getting the lesson. You know, take 10 people, busy people. One of them will really come up with a good lesson. 9 of them won't. So we would raise the quality of what would happen in our groups by helping provide something they could follow. Okay? And if you get that one person that just loves to dig and dig on their own, let them go. You know, that's okay. But we brought the quality up. Also, I found that I thought when I got up and said something, people got it. What I learned later was when I really concentrate on something. For example, I'll never forget, I preached 6 weeks on prayer one time. And we put prayer in small groups for 6 weeks. And about the fourth week, people really started getting committed to prayer in their life out of that kind of concentration on a subject. And that's a tremendous advantage as a pastor, because if there's an area you want to really move the church to and grow together, you can use your sermons and the small groups to bring the whole church along in that area. Does that help? Okay, there's a lot of curriculum today. There's so much stuff written that you can pick from. Good stuff.
And the stuff that you did, in addition to being in the appendix to the book, that web link that we put up yesterday, I'll put it up once again. You can go and glean Dale's questions. And you really wrote only a handful of questions to go with each sermon, right?
Yeah, we'd write 14, 15, 16. You could pick or choose or move right through it.
Great.
And But heavy on application. People have got to have some place they apply this information and this truth that they're getting. Great. That's when it comes alive. Okay, we want to thank you very much. And I'll be here, you know, next couple of days. If you want to get me in the hallway or sit down, talk, ask questions, I'll try to help you any way I can with small group ministry this week, okay? And anytime, really.